Welcome to G.L. Horton's Stage Page. Today is Sunday, the 14th of January, 2007. I was fully prepared to simply not produce a show this week. Between the holidays and the convention we planned to attend, there might not be time. Then I told so many people at the convention about the show and brought home a couple of monologues and an interview. What could I do? Here's the news from the convention center. This week, the new rep is opening Londoner Moira Buffini's Silence, a dark comedy set in the Dark Ages, while the Charlestown Working Theater has an adaptation of Chicagoan Studs Terkel's recent oral history, Race. The public showplace is doing its first Puppets After Dark Puppet Slam of the year on Saturday with its usual eclectic program. Amazon and Haiku, two short plays by Alfaro and Snodgrass featuring June Lewin, continues at Boston Playwrights, then moves to Gloucester's West End the following weekend. Out at Stoneham Theater, Guys on Ice, the ice fishing musical, runs until the end of the month, as does The Cherry Orchard at the Huntington, Bronte out at Wellesley, and The Woman in Black at the Hovey in Waltham. Downtown, the Lyric has Lachusa's See What I Want to See, and the public has Noel Coward's Design for Living. The Boston winter season is well underway. We met Lois, a New York actress, at a convention we attended this weekend. She was kind enough to agree to read a monologue or two for our show. Technical difficulties and enthusiastic conventioneers conspired to lower the quality of our recordings. In this case, it made a simple monologue sound like a live news broadcast. Here's Lois as a political pollster.
I make a good living from polling. I'm an expert. I can tell you this coming election is going to be stolen. The fraud is in the works now, and here's how I can tell the 2004 exit polls did not correspond to the election results. Statistically, this is flat out impossible. These were the same scientifically conducted exit polls that talking heads argued in the 1990s should be illegal. Why illegal? Some problem with accuracy? No, they are too accurate. Officials in the western states complained that late voters might stay home because past polls were accurate. No one would bother to vote in a race that was already decided. Polling has been perfected over decades. Statistics don't just stop working, not suddenly and not just in certain races. One side doesn't conspire to lie to the pollsters. People do lie. But the lies can be predicted statistically too. Exit polls just aren't easily manipulated. They are far more likely to be accurate than official counts. They are done by scientists with no stake in the outcome except accuracy. What if, as in 2004, the election results don't match the pre-election telephone polls? Then you can say for sure that the election was fixed. Now, impartial exit polls are being discontinued because the manipulators claim 2004 proved polls are inaccurate. Crap! Polls must be disappeared because in the upcoming election, Republicans will hold on to Congress by the narrowest of margins in the closest of races. Recounts will be useless. They simply rerun the same doctored data. How big a landslide would it have to be before an election couldn't be stolen? Who knows? The thieves have had a lot of practice since 2000. By now, they're really good at stealing.
Michael McAfee was at the convention and is mostly finished with his mammoth labor of love. And he spoke to Geraldine about it, so I wouldn't have to utter a half dozen F's in quick succession. The hotel people and most of the convention staff were quite kind in trying to keep the noise down so we could record the interview while they got the needed work done. Our thanks to those who were as considerate as possible.
This is Geraldine Horton, and I'm presently at Aresia, the science fiction convention that takes place in Boston, Massachusetts. And I'm here talking with Michael McAfee, whom I met in 1994. When he was looking for a co-writer on his radio theater project. We were both interested in radio theater, and he was just on a panel about radio theater at this convention. Now I'm going to ask him to tell me a little bit about his project.
Okay. Hi. The name of the radio theater project I'm working on is The Fantastic Fate of Frederick Farnsworth V. It's a serial adventure, 12 episodes. Started out 10, but some of the episodes grew long, so we broke them up. And it's a comedy, adventure, fantasy, romance, thriller, roller coaster ride that takes place in a Boston much like, but not quite our own.
That's the project that he was talking to me about in 1994.
Yes.
And it was a very interesting project, and I was excited by it, but I could see that it was not really me. He was looking for co-writers, and he found a great co-writer.
Yes, his name's David Rawberry, and currently he lives in the Midwest, but I keep in contact with him enough to let him know the status of things as they progress.
So you have just finished this project, right?
Oh, I have finished all the technical details of it. I actually do have to do a little remastering of some of the earlier episodes to match the level of the later ones because, you know, technology advanced while the project was in course. But yes, for all intents and purposes, it's done. I just have to do research on the best way to get it out to people.
Well, we've been trying to get my work out on podcast, and this is the Stage Page Content podcast that you are being interviewed by.
Excellent.
It appears every Sunday on Podomatic and is available through several other locations, sites. But yours is going to be available on podcast too, do you think? But first you're going to do the CDs.
Well, the CDs first. That way I have, you know, the hard copy version, because, you know, if it's something's not located in at least two locations, doesn't really exist online. You gotta have backups. But what I'm going to do first is do market research on the various ways the customers use podcasting to make sure that I have it in the right formats, in the right locations, so on and so forth, so that when it actually is available, it'll be ready to go, right what the people want when they need it.
Well, the presentation, which was a 3-hour presentation here at this convention, consisted of two different similar storylines, one of which was a Redshift adventure, and you starred as Redshift in that.
Yes, I've been working with Neil and the PMRP, which is the Post Meridian radio players, for a couple of years now. Neil was a person like you, followed up on the email that I'd sent out. He also decided the project wasn't what he could work on at the time, but he kept in contact with me because he had his own projects and he liked what he heard, and he bought some of the early versions, editions, I guess, pressings, whatever the proper term is, of some of the existing episodes of Fantastic Fate of Frederick Farnsworth V, and kept in contact with me, and he asked if I would do one of the voices for the Chicken Heart performance last year.
That's here at the Aresia Con.
Right, but we did it first at a local theater called the Theater at First. Theater at First, which is at in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Yes, at the church.
Yes.
Church.
Yes.
I'm familiar with that. They did a play of mine last season.
Oh, excellent.
One of my short one acts. So I, of course, have a high opinion of their work. And so
yes,
it shows me.
Yeah, they do good stuff.
And so are you doing it also in when they prepare it for broadcast? Are you playing the leading role for this?
Well,
or is
that's
just in it now.
Well, that hasn't been finalized. I'm available if he wants it. I'm also, you know, okay if he needs someone else. I was just thrilled to be out, to be involved in the Redshift project.
It went very well.
Oh, yeah.
It was well received here, and it was almost standing room only. It filled
yes,
the ballroom.
Well, Chicken Heart went over very well, and word just went out. When people heard that we were doing another production, people were excited. So, you know, there have been some proto-type radio theater productions at previous conventions, not just Aresia, but other Boston area conventions. They were a bit smaller scale in comparison to what you saw a couple hours ago. There were mostly a couple people, and it was more like a book on tape performed live, rather than a real radio
production. Yes, I saw the one 3 years ago. I didn't see the one last year. I wasn't here last year. I was on the road with one of my plays. But the second presentation they did was called Second Shift.
Yes.
And it was yours. The first one was definitely had been rewritten somewhat, fit into this con.
Well, not so much not so much rewritten as written. He had the idea and the setting already worked out, and the characters.
And the characters.
But he didn't have the storyline. So Rob can tell you better than I can, of course, the perfect details. But I believe once the Aresia was set up, they decided to do Redshift, and they wrote a story just to take advantage.
Specifically to have lots of in-jokes that people would enjoy, which they did very much. And then the next one was a sort of a Boston in-joke, but not really a joke. It was located
the starting
here,
point, if you will.
Starting point, where the reference world was Boston, but they were in a fantasy world.
Well, that's a different group, the second shift players. But I've met a couple of them before in other contexts. They also, separately, wanted to do something. They, you know, much like us, they wanted to write something. They tried a couple of different mediums and finally decided that radio theater was the best way to go. And, you know, yeah, there's a lot of, well, there are some, you know, shortcomings with writing radio theater, mostly in the way of organizing everything. One of the benefits is you don't have to write a lot to describe what people are saying or doing. You just have to do it, and they just perform it.
Well, it seems to me that the biggest draw of writing radio theater for people who think in dialogue, who imagine in dialogue, who are word rather than visual oriented, is that if you don't manage to get it publicized well enough to fill those seats, you have not necessarily failed.
Oh, of course not.
You can do it before a live audience, you can do it in the studio, but once you've done it, it exists.
Yes.
You have the rest of your life to promote it. And if one of the things that you do promote turns out to be popular, then as we saw from people who came to see this presentation, based on the popularity of last year's presentation, that audience will grow. And they will tell other people who can then go to whatever form you published it in or broadcast it in and hear it for themselves.
Yeah, that's one of the things that during the depths of my underemployment, when I didn't know why I was trying to finish my own projects, you know, the Fantastic Fate, when I was trying to finish it, I didn't know why I was doing this, because here I was short on money and working, and whatever I earned, if I earned enough, I, you know, tried to get some studio time, and then I just realized I just had to make something exist. I needed to bring something into existence that was really just cool and wonderful and wondrous.
And you've created this world, and if you're lucky, this world will be immortal.
Right, and if nothing else, all the actors were really impressed by what they were able to do with it, what they were able to achieve along with it. So it's brought a lot of joy to a lot of people, and hopefully once it's done and brought forward. See, now that I'm functionally employed, and actually not even just functionally, I'm gainfully employed again, you know, I realize it really is, in a way, a vanity project. I didn't do it just...
Say a vanity project. Vanity project implies that it has sort of despicable motives, but the impulse to create something and share it with other people, whether it's commercially viable or not, is certainly not a vanity project. It's the artistic impulse,
right,
which is in all of us and deserves to be honored.
Okay, in which case, I realize it will not be commercially successful. Now, I can afford not to recoup my investment on it, because, you know, I did not give up a day job for it. And so really, it's just for the pure enjoyment of it. I'm not responsible for anyone's well-being based on this project, so it can be whatever it needs to be.
Whatever it needs to be. It can speak to whomever it speaks to.
Yes.
It can speak for whatever degree of loudness and effectiveness seems to turn out to be appropriate.
Artistically, a complete success. Financially, it does not matter anymore.
And that's a wonderful thing to be able to say.
Yes.
Now, the third part of this particular presentation was on talking about methods of distribution and the technical demands of the medium and sharing of that information amongst the people who were interested in. And that's another story.
The technical aspects have developed, and by degrees, over the last 5 to 10 years. So much exists now that didn't when I first started this project. I mean, when I first emailed you, the World Wide Web had not yet gained the widespread use.
Right.
That it has
when
now.
You said radio drama, you really meant radio. You were going to look for a broadcast.
I was going to try to find a broadcast
station.
But now
you don't have to broadcast it. You stream it.
Exactly, and I'll have to find out exactly what that is, because there are also all these different formats, and I'll have to make sure that, you know, that people get what it is they're looking for.
You have to be very careful about how you label it, tag it, meta it, whatever it is, so that it gets into the ears of people who would be interested and doesn't accidentally disrupt the lives of people who would never listen to it.
Right, and then there are the whole legal aspects of distributions and copyrights and such. I mean, everything I've ever consulted with people in the know about say that no matter what, I, you know, don't lose anything by putting it on the in a digital format,
yes,
and accessible.
It stays your copyright, but on the other hand, people don't sue each other back and forth for these things as long as they're fairly non-commercial. A cease and desist is the worst thing that can happen to you. You accidentally use a little quote of some music that's supposed to make people
laugh. Oh, well, that's not...
Laugh.
Right,
that's fair use unless they say don't.
Oh, no, no. I did a lot of research on what I could and could not use in terms of parody and satire. What I'm talking about is when I put out my stuff, if people download it and then distribute it to people free somewhere, do I have to do anything in particular? I mean, is it a threat to my own interests? Do I have to do that kind of research? It's going to take some... It'll be a foot first in the water kind of situation where I just test and see what I'm comfortable with. And you hear stories of people just being jerks about taking things and you know, distributing them, you know, without your permission.
Well, you have to hope that the kind of people that your work would appeal to you to
exactly
are the kind of people who would respect it and use it as you would wish it to be used.
Right. So on the one hand, you know, it's daunting, but on the other hand, it's pretty exciting, the possibilities that possible word of mouth distribution.
This is a whole new world where the means to make these things have come down in cost so much that anybody can have a basement studio. It's nice that you were able to use a professional studio.
Yes, and it's nice to have an engineer who was interested in doing something new and unusual.
And making it sound the way you wanted it to sound.
Yes, yes. He was very good at that. And that's one of the reasons I'm going back is because he's found new ways to get some of the earlier sounds to be even better. So remaster them better.
Do you want to give him a plug?
Oh, yes. We did our work at Red Dog Studios in Blackstone, Massachusetts. They're extremely Googleable.
Thanks for stopping by again. I expect we'll be hearing more from Lois and Michael in the future, but for this week, we're done. So, until next week, bye now.